Okay, so this is the article titled Fully Online Multi-Command Brain-Computer Interface with Visual Neurofeedback Using SSVEP Paradigm. It's by Pablo Martinez, Havogim Baka, I can't even pronounce his name, and Andre Chichoki. So in the introduction, they start off giving a brief description on their definition of a brain-computer interface, which they define as a system that acquires and analyzes brain signals to create a high bandwidth communication channel in real time between the human brain and a computer or machine, essentially a machine using the brain to control an external device. It is a multidisciplinary field involving neuroscience, engineering, signal processing, and classification is usually using either machine learning or traditional statistical techniques. They go on to describe three different areas from which features can be extracted from the brain. First, they talk about measuring brain activity from the primary motor cortex, from motor imagery. The second is using EEG periodic waveforms, so patterns that repeat over time, such as SSVEP, which is a sinusoidal signal, which can be extracted in the frequency domain. It's using multiple flashing light sources, as you guys just saw. And then the last one is using an ERP, or an event-related potentials, which is a waveform that occurs at a specific point in time. So you have a specific stimulus onset, and then after a certain amount of milliseconds, you're expecting an ERP, and it needs to be averaged over many, many trials. So the first approach usually uses either temporal or spatial changes in the sensory motor rhythm, or changes between the mu rhythm and the beta rhythm in event-related desynchronization and synchronization. The second way, the second set with periodic waveforms, their features are usually extracted in the frequency domain. However, there has been one study where they used the time-based system where they were looking at everything over time. And they go on to say, they go on to talk about the rationale for their specific study. So all studies so far, except for Materka and Bitsuik, have used a frequency domain classification in their SSVEP-based systems. And all studies so far have used a stimulus that's in a fixed spot in space. So their study, what they're trying to put forward, is to create a SSVEP-based BCI using both A, a time domain classification system, and B, a moving stimulus. A moving stimulus creates more problems in signal in artifacts and signal degradation, so they had to implement specific filters and signal processing techniques to keep the signal at a high quality. They go on to talk about the advantages and disadvantages of SSVEP. So the advantages include a high performance in comparison to other BCI systems in terms of information transfer rate. It involves minimal training time and requirements from the subject. It tends to be robust in respect to noise and artifacts. Eye blinks and other artifacts can cause signal degradation. However, these can be removed using advanced signal processing techniques, such as blind signal separation, which they use in this study. Third, it's easy to extend the system to allow more commands. You just have to include stimuli at different flashing rates. The other points in which they say what the advantages are kind of redundant. They go on to say that it has a higher information transfer rate. That was already stated in the first one. So then to move on to the disadvantages, they say that flickering may cause fatigue, as we just experienced.
Or nausea.
or nausea, too. flickering at certain frequencies and colors are not appropriate for those with photosensitivity and certain neurological disorders. SSVEP-based systems also involve muscular control of the eyes, which means that it's not appropriate for seriously disabled people. So it's not reliable and stable in those subjects who have troubles with eye movements, so it's not applicable to all users. So then the paper moves forward to talk about the stimulator design. They used a smart board with an array of four small checkerboard images that surrounded a car on a racetrack. The car would move along the racetrack, and the stimulus would move along with the car. However, this neurofeedback of the moving car didn't occur during the training phase, only during the testing and free movement phase. So now to move on to the signal processing chain. Their signal was processed in the following chain as seen in figure 2. First, their signal starts off from the EEG, which is just a one-dimensional signal, just a time series or set of time series. It would go through a filter and then a high-pass filter first and then blind signal separation. So what they would do is they would use the AMUSE algorithm with a sliding window. What the AMUSE algorithm does is performs two consecutive principal component analysis blocks, one after another. The first is applied to just the input data, while the second PCA uses singular value decomposition and is applied on a time-delayed covariance matrix. So you don't use the actual EEG data. You compute the covariance between each electrode to create a matrix, and then you perform the analysis on that matrix. After that, they would have a bank of filters, so they would create each time series would then be created into a set of multiple time series, so that if you had a single sensor, that single sensor would then be put through a filter, and there were multiple filters, so that if you had the electrode O2, you would have O2 through this filter, O2 through a 10 hertz filter. And each filter was a very thin bandpass filter that only allowed the bandwidth of half a hertz to go through. After the filters, they would use they would perform feature extraction by averaging the energy of that which passed through the filter. The time series was then smoothed using SG smoothing, and their classifier was a neural network classifier. The study was implemented using LabVIEW and C and C++ to implement the BCI system. The stimulator used a sped-up optimized algorithm using MATLAB. So their EEG consisted of 6 electrodes, 5 electrodes in the occipital area, including electrodes CPZ, so central parietal, in this, then the parietal in the center, PZ, the parietal occipital, so POZ, parietal 1, and parietal 2. And then they also included one additional electrode over the frontal cortex. So their EEG sampling rate was at 256 hertz, and their artifacts were rejected by using this blind signal separation algorithm. So as I stated earlier, it was with a sliding window over 4 seconds and using this AMUSE algorithm, which performs PCA in 2 blocks. The first block whitens the data by performing it directly on the input data, while the second block is performed on the time-delayed covariance matrix. So essentially what PCA does is it turns a set of time series into a set of principal components. Each principal component represents a part of each time series. Principal components are created from uncorrelated aspects of the original signal. So, and by removing certain principal components and then applying the inverse of the PCA, you can then reconstruct the signal. And by removing certain components, you effectively perform a data compression. And if the appropriate components are removed, you can compress the data to hold the essential features while removing artifacts and redundancies in the signal. So I have an example like of my own to kind of explain what PCA does. So you have four time series that are just a simple wave. You have a 5 hertz, a 10 hertz, and two other 5 hertz. When you perform these original time series, when you perform PCA, you will end up with the first principal component being a 5 hertz waveform with a standardized eigenvalue of 3. The second one would be a 10 hertz waveform with a standardized eigenvalue of 1, where the other three components would be practically 0. So essentially, the principal components are ordered in the amount of variation they hold of the original signal. So because it's using standardized eigenvalues, 3 out of 4 would be 75% of the signal. So because we have 3 5 hertz waves out of 4 signals, that 5 hertz is 75% of the total variation. So because it's ordered in the amount of variation of the original signal, the first component holds the majority of that variation. Eye blinks involve a big spike in amplitude and involves a huge variation from the other signals, so it is usually part of the first principal component. And by rejecting the first and last principal component, effectively we are rejecting large amplitude artifacts as well as small artifacts that are redundancies in the signal. So their next set of signal processing was bank of filters. So they basically created a set of filters for each time series, performing a third order elliptic infinite impulse response filter. These filters only allowed half a hertz through, so majority of the frequencies weren't allowed to pass through the signal. And after each signal was filtered, it was smoothed using a Sativisky and Golay smoothing filter using a second order polynomial. The advantages of this smoothing over the usually used autoregressive smoothing is that it preserves more fundamental features and keeps maximum amplitude and minimum amplitude and widths of the peak in comparison to the other technique that's normally used. So if you look at figure 7, you can see the first example is of the Sativik-Golay filter. So the bold line is just the signal. The other line is the signal plus noise, kind of looking like an EEG-like signal. And by smoothing the signal from the original signal plus noise, you get this kind of curved waveform. And in comparison to the other image in this figure, it's similar to the original signal. It's more squared. It's not like the moving average smoothing has more of like a triangular kind of waveform going with not as like thin of a peak.
So which one is more ideal then? Like, it's hard to see if you printed it out in black and white, but for the A and B figures, there's that red line. So on top, they almost look more like curves, like they seem to fit really well. But then on the bottom one, like you said, like they're more triangular, like they're more jagged. Like, so I see, like next to this moving average or whatever, it says 5, 30, and 2. So what are those three values mean again? Because it looks like one has 5, 30,
2. The 2 is the order of the filter. So it's a second order filter.
Okay. So that's why it's smoother. I think you've explained this ordering of like a higher order
filter. The higher order a filter is, the more like fine-tuned the math is. So
it looks more like a real wave.
Yeah. Okay. So your original signal is just flat and then like a square peak, kind of like a square wave.
Mm-hmm.
And then they added noise, like just random noise.
Because this is simulated data.
Simulated data used in this example to show a comparison of
mm-hmm.
the moving average smoothing versus the SG filter that they use.
Mm-hmm.
So the SG moving average has similar no noise cancellation, but has better tracking of the changes. So if there's a big change in amplitude, the SG filter preserves this better by keeping the peak, the lower end of the signal, and the width of the peak is more approximate to the original signal. Their classifier used an adaptive network-based fuzzy inference system. I don't know too much about this, but I believe it's a kind of neural network that involves fuzzy logic. It also improves the system after every trial using backpropagation, and it improves it by using the least squares method. So then to go on to their study exactly what they were doing, enough about the signal processing. The first step was the training mode. So participants were requested to either look up, down, left, or right over a voice intercom every 6 seconds in a randomized order. The normalized power was after each filter was extracted between 3 and 6 seconds. So every 6 seconds the subject was asked, they were given 3 seconds to start looking at the task, and then the data was collected. During training, there was no feedback, so the car wouldn't move along the racetrack at all. The car was fixed in the center of the screen, and this was to facilitate the subject to focus his attention on each flickering checkerboard. So the second mode of this system was the evaluation mode. Subjects were asked to move on their own accord in any direction they wished, but they had to confirm if they were correct or incorrect in their response. They were instructed to pick a direction every 9 seconds over 32 trials, and neurofeedback was enabled over this evaluation mode. And then the last mode was free race unsupervised mode, in which the subject was able to move the car freely over the race course, and they were asked to complete the lap at least once to evaluate their overall control. This typically took each subject between 90 and 150 seconds to achieve this complex goal, and also depended on the flicker frequency range. So now to move on to their results. Their results are tabled in table 1. So for subject 1, they had a success rate of 100% with a delay of 3.6 seconds plus or minus 0.4 seconds. Subject 2 performed at a rate of 77.5%. Subject 3 was 94.8%. Subject 4 was 92.3%, and their last subject was also 100%. So, generally, that was for the low frequency range. So, 4 of their subjects had a 100% success rate in the medium frequency range using stimuli between 12 and 17 hertz, whereas the last subject only got 82.3%. The same subject who got 77.5% in the lower frequency range scored perfect in the medium frequency range, and vice versa for subject 5 doing the lower frequency and the medium frequency. So this kind of shows that the frequency matters as well as the subject, because BCI use is a skill as well. It involves a bit of training and learning how to kind of control your biosignal. So their average success rate for the low frequency range was 93%. With an execution delay of 3.7 plus or minus 1 second. The medium frequency had a success rate of 96.5% with an execution delay of 3.5 plus or minus 0.8 seconds. So overall, their BCI with the medium frequency range stimulus performed better, both in terms of success rate on average and in terms of how fast it would transfer the information. It would transfer the information 4 bits per minute more than the other one.
Excuse me, Mike, can I just clarify the lower or medium hertz? Is that what it's recording at, or is that what
it's flickering?
That's
how fast it's flashing. Okay. Yes. So the lower frequency, they used between 5 and 8 hertz. So 5, 6, 7, 8 hertz for 4 stimuli. And then the medium frequency was 12.
12 to 17?
Yeah, 12 to 17. Yeah. Yeah, and their conclusions were the SSV paradigm is well known in the community. However, they believe that there are certain areas where novel signal processing techniques and parameters can be set to improve the usability and performance. Specifically, they're talking about using a time domain classifier and a moving stimulus. This is novel considering that other studies have not done this. And their system allows good performance for both low frequency and high frequency, low frequency and medium frequency stimuli, because the performance was pretty similar. In summary, we successfully demonstrated the application of a fast online blind signal separation algorithm for automatic rejection of artifacts and noise reduction, a bank of bandpass filters with non-stationary smoothing and adaptive fuzzy classifier. And that's the article. Yeah, kind of tough to get through that.
Yeah, a bit. So in the end, it says, like, when you're just talking about, like, the implications and that kind of stuff, like, so what are some of the well-known applications of BCIs, like, just in general that you've started to look into?
People use them for, people are trying to implement BCIs for the control of wheelchairs.
Mm-hmm.
Honda has a research center in Tokyo where they're working with, like, medical-grade EEG and wheelchairs, trying to create a motor imagery BCI so that someone can move a wheelchair left and right based on their motor imagery. People have created spellers, like the P300 speller. You can create an SSVP speller too. You just have the letters flashing at different rates.
Mm-hmm.
People have used BCIs for controlling a mouse. I've also seen people try to create BCIs to create music, something they find kind of cool. The user would use their brainwaves to try to create sounds, and they would get feedback by creating different sounds based on the frequency. I don't really know too much, but I just saw something really cool. Yeah?
This is similar or different to like the program that comes with that, like when you first pull it out of the box.
Essentially, you can train it to be like happy, neutral, sad, or something.
Happy, neutral, yeah, and it can play a certain sound when it's happy.
So kind of similar, I guess.
Yeah, those are the main applications, but people have tried to apply it to to wheelchairs, those are the major ones I've seen is wheelchairs, moving stuff on computer screens, mice. I saw something on BCIs and creating music. That sounds cool, but it wasn't really relevant to what I was looking at, so I moved forward, kind of put it aside. More I'll look into it later.
It'd be cool if they could develop the algorithms and stuff so you could control robotic prosthetic limbs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They have invasive BCIs and they're currently working on stuff like that. The issue with invasive BCIs is over time, you get signal degradation just because the cell biology is changing. And like over time, if you set something up to be next to some neuron, and that neuron, that cluster of neurons starts dying and new ones come, you end up getting a poor signal over time. I was watching a YouTube video of they're creating, this would be considered a BCI2, but not really kind of in the classical sense, like prosthetic eyes that they're connecting to people's brains. And it allows people to see. It's like really like low resolution, like we have our computer monitors at 1080p, and these people are just seeing black and white light in like 17p. It's like 17p, really. But it allows someone that's never, like, who's been blind for a long time to see like the silhouette of a person and stuff like that. And if you haven't had that experience, it's I imagine it'd be kind of breathtaking. Just all of a sudden be able to see silhouettes of people.
Sure. Yeah. Anybody else have any questions? Bye-bye. Good job.